Welcome to Season 5 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
This season is proudly sponsored by Allplay. If you've been following my social media, aka Token Gay Mer, you'll see that my Allplay gaming table gets used on the daily when I'm not flying to different conventions. Between hosting meals on it as a dining room table or removing the panels and adding the cup holders for a Friday night game night as a board gaming table, it gets used constantly. It's also perfect for being a working station for me building my ridiculous amount of prototypes. It honestly gets used more than I ever would have expected. Not to mention, it's great for hiding games and their pieces from my cats. Sans is my little box sitter, while Nova tries to steal the dice as Banshee watches from high atop the cat tower. I've caught them attempting to take dice from Allplay's Sequoia and Mountain Goats, two of my favorite Allplay games that my non-gamer friends adore. We play a lot of party games, and these two, they don't mind me taking out instead. So check out Allplay's tables, bags, playmats, and board games at allplay.com. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, Episode 109, Survivor, The Drive as Spoken. Today we are joined by Ian Clayman, a senior game designer at Exploding Kittens, as well as the person who created this awesome IP-related game. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, happy to be here, Danielle. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, totally. I know Survivor started in the 2000s. It might have actually been 2000. And my family has watching, I think, since season one. But I'm super excited to have you on the show, even though I did not watch it every single season.
I completely understand. I'm a lot like you. I was a big fan kind of around middle school and fell off a little bit. I kind of dropped off reality television as a whole for a while. It was honestly really exciting and a little bit nostalgic to get to work on this. Brought me back.
I also stopped watching reality TV. I only watch it with other people. So I am curious. First, introduce yourself and how you got into games, but I also do kind of want to know what made you drop off reality TV.
Yeah, so I am a senior game designer at Exploding Kittens. I actually started out there as an intern summer 2019. I have been there now 4 years as a full-time designer. Started officially in March of 2020, which great time to start a new job and make a cross-country move from New York to LA.
Oh, that's funny. I did almost the opposite direction. I went Chicago area to Springfield, Massachusetts at the end of 2020. I relate.
Yeah, I was in Chicago for the first time May of last year. Amazing city. Unbelievable architecture.
Oh, agreed. The architecture tour, if you ever get a chance, if you haven't already done it on the boats, super fun.
We did, but I would gladly do it like two or three more times. I feel like there were things I missed.
That's so cool. So you do the cross-country trip. You land yourself over on the West Coast, and where do you go from there?
Luckily, because I had done the internship the summer before, and I'd actually continued working for EK as a freelancer the semester I was back at school, it wasn't so much of a difficult transition. I really knew everybody at the company. There were, I think, only like two or three more hires in the intervening months. But it was definitely an adjustment. Pandemic era kind of changed the face of the tabletop gaming industry a little bit. So it was me learning to kind of navigate my first full-time designer position in the industry while also navigating kind of these massive title changes in trends in the industry and what the buyers were looking for at the time, because the pandemic kind of completely disrupted the games that people were playing and who they were playing with. So it was a major adjustment, but I just found that like EK is such a forward-thinking company that we kind of weathered the storm and really saw it as an opportunity to kind of do exciting things and take advantage of the opportunity.
That is really cool that you found growth through that time, because I know not everybody did. And I would agree that like lifestyle wise, the company is very good at adapting. And a lot of companies used to be like, we're not going to make two player games only. And then after COVID, everyone's like, oh, we're stuck with our spouse. We're stuck with our one roommate. And two player games went up and solo games went up. And then as soon as things started opening up, everyone's like, I want to hang out with tons and tons of people. So we need some party games with like high player counts. Like it 100% changed the landscape of games, and it brought a lot more people into games. So we needed more entry-level games, reintroducing the same mechanics that maybe we've already known if you'd already been in the hobby. So it's been pretty cool to see all that growth.
Yeah, I'll give our partners on the buying end of the relationship a lot of credit. Target, Walmart, and Amazon all very quickly realized the demand for two-player experiences and even co-op experiences. They worked with us directly at the time, and collectively we all sort of said, like, this is what the players want. This has kind of been a gap in the industry for a long time, and how can we marry those two things of kind of the want and the need as the situation arose? And it was definitely an interesting challenge. I kind of cut my teeth on my first leadership role as a designer at the company during that time. We published a game called A Little Wordy, which is this really fun kind of
two-player bird-themed word game. I really like it. It's a good one.
Yeah. I almost describe it as like Scrabble meets Guess Who.
Oh, that's so cool. And what were you studying when you got the internship with Exploding Kittens?
Yeah, so I actually did go to school for game design. I graduated from Marist College, which is up in Poughkeepsie, New York, right on the Hudson River. They have a program there, still fairly young. I was technically only like the second or third graduate, but it's called Games and Emerging Media. And essentially it is games first and other innovative interactive media as secondary. So there was some focus on virtual reality, there was some focus on web design, but kind of a very holistic, creative first approach. There was a technical track if you wanted to go down that route, but the goal was prepare students to be creative forces in the industry and have that technical background as secondary to kind of get your ideas down on paper, so to speak.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a really cool program. And did Exploding Kittens have some kind of relationship with them, or was it just a thing that you saw on their website? They were looking for interns.
I got through the door through a little bit of classical Jewish geography. I knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody who had the relationship at EK. And I basically just put out feelers. Like, I was looking for an internship. I was struggling to find something, kind of doing the prescribed cold emails and cold call sort of thing. And I just started telling everybody I knew that I was looking for something, whether they were even tangentially related to the games industry or not.
Wow, yeah, it sounds like it worked.
It really did. I've kind of stayed in touch with Marist, and I've spoken to the students there a few times, and what I tell them is, like, there is no shame in using connections to get a foot in the door. It's a really competitive industry. There's a lot of demand and not necessarily enough spaces, and your skills are what land you a job, but if you can kind of demonstrate a personal connectionship and have someone vouch for you and basically reiterate that, like, you are a good person to work with, you're easy to work with, and you are smart, it is not just the right thing to do, but honestly the honest thing to do to leverage those connections and trust people to be advocates on your behalf.
No, I think that's really true. I've found that networking has really helped me grow in this industry. And even when you're working for like a bigger company, it can be quite helpful. But then let's circle back over to the game Survivor. First off, how did Exploding Kittens decide to go from making their own IP stuff to going like, hey, you know what would be really fun? Let's take this show that's been on for, I think it's going to be hitting 48 seasons this year. Freaking insane. And decided to make a game for it.
Yeah, so this basically came about as a result of a longtime friendship between our CEO, Alon Lee, and the host of the show, Jeff Probst. Jeff and Alon have known each other about 10 years now. They actually met early into the company's career. Jeff, I believe, backed our Kickstarter campaign even when we launched the original Exploding Kittens game. And we've been wanting to work together for a long time. It just sort of took a while for the opportunity to materialize. But about 2 years ago, it was sort of right place, right time. And the three of us co-designed this game. And it just worked phenomenally. Jeff is, as you can imagine, incredibly smart when it comes to the Survivor brand. He's encyclopedic when it comes to the history of the show. He also just is a very savvy designer when it comes to social mechanics and dynamics. It was just sort of the right fit for EK. It gelled really well with what we always try to do with our games. Our mission statement here is basically we don't make games that are fun. We make games that make the people you're playing with fun. Survivor was just kind of the perfect brand to bring into that fold as an IP sort of deal.
I mean, I was not surprised that this was something that you guys did. It felt very much in the same vein as a lot of your other games, but that's so cool that Jeff actually worked on it with you. Having that probably made researching the IP a lot easier, seeing as earlier in the episode we were talking about how you kind of got out of watching the show and doing reality TV. So what kind of research did you end up doing to contribute to the gameplay and make sure it's thematic?
I basically allowed myself to be the naive one in the room, but I basically tried to keep myself green throughout the process. My thought was we could lean on Jeff to be the fountain of institutional knowledge for the game, and we could lean on Alon to be the voice of Exploding Kittens design in the room. My goal was to basically be the one asking questions to not necessarily break things, but to really push the boundaries on what we felt we could do or what we felt we could get away with. Essentially push Jeff and Alon a little bit out of their comfort zone so that we could really get creative and a little bit innovative with how we were solving certain problems.
Okay. So for anyone who hasn't played the game, would you mind going over how you're playing?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a game for 3 to 6 players. And at the start of the game, each player is choosing what tribe they want to play as. These tribes are 2 previous Survivor contestants, and they kind of run the gamut between the old era and the new era. Men, women, younger, older, heroes, villains. It's a really great set of characters who superfans of the show will be familiar with. The goal of the game is basically, like in Survivor, to be the last player standing. The way that that works is you have a deck of cards in the middle of the table, and interspersed in that deck are what we call tribal council cards. And the way it works is on your turn, you start off by stealing a card from another player. It is mandatory. We make a joke in the instructions that you're bound to make enemies playing a game of Survivor. So we kind of get people started on that early. You can then play any cards from your hand that you would like, and you always end your turn by drawing the top card from the deck. Now, if the card you draw is that tribal council card, you launch into a tribal council experience. And this kind of mimics the way it works on the show, where the player who drew the card is up for being voted out, but they are also kind of serving Jeff's role in the room, where we actually give you a script and walk you through the process. So we start off by saying, if anyone has any tribal advantage cards, now's the time to play them. If not, here's how this is going to work. Everyone's going to close their eyes. One player will be handed the actual game box, which serves kind of as the voting urn from the show. If you're not seeing it in a while, on the show, players will kind of go off into a separate room. They'll write the name of the person that they would like to vote out on a piece of paper, stick it in the urn. Well, we couldn't exactly ship with a giant ceramic urn.
I mean, or could you have? No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, look, if it were a hobby game, maybe we could get away with that. Little harder in mess. So we really wanted to solve the problem of, like, how do you translate that kind of really tactile experience into a board game that, you know, we wanted to price in a way that's really compelling to mass market. Working with our art team, we actually designed a 6 cubby structure built into the side of the box. So the game box is an actual component in the game, and you literally turn it on its side, and you've got 6 little, like, mail slots is the best way I can phrase it. And everyone gets a generic vote card. So when it is your turn to vote, everyone else's eyes are closed. You get to take your vote card and place it in the slot of the player you want to vote out. And then you kind of pass the box down the line, close your eyes, tap that player on the shoulder, and now it's their turn to vote. And of course, like with Survivor, we have sort of extra vote cards that are kind of an analogy to like collecting resources as you're going around the island, and people vote, and eventually the box makes it all the way around the circle. Everyone opens their eyes, and then at that point, the player leading tribal council gets to go and say the classic line, if anyone has a hidden immunity idol and would like to play it, now's the time to do so. Sometimes there's a twist where one player will play an immunity idol and then another player will play one, and kind of changes up the dynamic of who is potentially on the chopping block. At the end of tribal council, one or more players will have one of their character cards voted out. When both of your character cards are voted out, you are now out of the game, but you're not actually done, because what happens is once we're down to the final two players, everyone else who's been voted out becomes a member of what's called the jury. The goal for the final two players is for each of them to convince the jury, made up of all the people that they burned bridges with and voted out along the way, why they deserve to win. And we actually coach our players through that process as well. Jeff worked with us to basically nail down the types of questions that he would ask players in that situation to get them to explain their motivations and make their own arguments. There's also opportunities for the members of the jury to make arguments for or against either of those final two players. And then eventually it all culminates in a final vote where basically everyone counts down from three and then points to the player they think should win. And whoever gets the most votes from the jury is crowned our sole survivor.
Oh, that's so fun. At what player count do you think this game shines the most?
It definitely plays the best at, I would say, 5 to 6. Whenever you're doing any kind of like really socially engineered game, lower player counts tend to be a struggle, as I'm sure you know. We put in a lot of work to make the game balance, not just for that 3-player count, but also rewarding players who might not be as extroverted or socially minded. But I would definitely say the more players you have, the more fun the game is. It's just more opportunities for betrayal, more opportunities to make alliances and deals, more personalities at the table. Everyone gets to kind of take on a little bit of a different archetype. It's right snugly seated in that kind of party game, high player count space.
And it sounded like maybe you play as 2 characters. Is that for like lower player counts?
Yeah, it's for lower player counts. That way nobody can get eliminated from the game immediately. It also just helped to make sure that players are able to make it farther into the game. What we noticed is that if you get eliminated immediately, well, now you're just kind of sitting there. And it's fun to watch, but it's obviously more fun to play. When you get 2 lives, what happens is you may get voted against early on, but then people kind of no longer see you as a target. It gives you the opportunity to kind of play the wounded puppy card and be like, oh, you know, help me out or join an alliance with me. I could really use your support. And then fly under the radar a little bit, regain your resources, and turn everything on its head later on down the road.
Yeah. So one of my favorite parts of the TV show was forming like the alliances and people betraying each other. Like, what does the table talk look like for this game?
It's really interesting. The fact that you have to steal a card from somebody at the start of your turn was our invitation from the word go to do that alliance building process. The way that players handle that, it really all depends on like the type of survivor they want to be for that game. We've seen players who basically the entire game are apologetic and diplomatic with that mechanic, and they will essentially go down the line each time it's their turn, and they'll say, well, I'll take a card from you this turn, and I'll take a card from another player next turn, and then a third player. We also have had games where we'll see playtesters and friends, and somebody will just kind of say at random, well, you're on my right, so I'll steal a card from you. And from literally the first turn, those two players are now enemies.
Do players ever go like, hey, take this card and be like, form an alliance with me, like, this is a good card, steal it from me?
There is a rule in the game that you're not allowed to show people your hand, just because we want to kind of keep some guardrails on there. But we have had players basically fan out their cards and they'll kind of cheat one a little bit more prominently. And they'll go, you know, I can't tell you what card to take, but you might want to take this one. And that's always interesting to see, because not only do we see cases where players are honest about that, we've also seen cases where players will go through that whole exercise only to dump like a really invaluable card in someone else's hand. And then they have to now play the little social deduction game of, oh no, like, I'm telling you, that was the best card in my hand, while we can clearly see they have like two immunity idols and a reward challenge and a bunch of other really juicy cards that they are pretending not to have so they could just give up something minor.
And so then what did playtesting look like in the development of this game?
At EK, we kind of like to go through multiple phases of the same process. And that's, we always start off with internal testing for the dev team, where we will kind of keep things a little bit close to the chest until we feel like the mechanics and rules are pretty solid. And then we'll extend that out to the entire team at Exploding Kitten. So we'll test with the art team and the marketing team and the accounting team to kind of get a good sample of players with all different experience levels and backgrounds. And then we always move into what we call our Kitten Test Pilot Program. So this is a network of about 400 individuals and families who we've been working with since about the middle of 2020 now, I'm going to say. There's two ways we handle that relationship. One is that if people live in Los Angeles, where the company is based, or they happen to be in town visiting, as has happened once or twice, they can literally come into our office and play the game in front of us. And that's always great because we can ask questions in the room and kind of call in audibles as necessary. But the other thing we do is we will actually mail prototypes out to people. So we'll put together kind of a really rough print and play type situation, and we will mail that out to members of our Kitten Test Pilot Program. And in return, they actually send us back video footage of them playing the game. And we ask them kind of to, you know, talk through their thinking process out loud. And it's great because it's as close as we can get to hanging out with our players in their living room as they try out the game for the first time. And we will go through those three steps of dev team testing, internal testing, external testing as many times as we can over the course of development. Once we feel like external testing revealed something may have broken along the way, or it made us see an opportunity for a new mechanic to add in or a way to change up how we're presenting an idea, we kind of go back to the drawing board, make our changes, and then back to internal, back to external, rinse and repeat.
No, that definitely makes sense. And you said when you were designing the game, you were kind of pushing the other two to kind of be the rails. When you were saying that, were you talking more like you were kind of the lead of the design and making sure that this game works for both the fans, but also individuals that like this kind of game? I would love to know more about that.
Yeah, so I'll sort of break that down into two parts. As far as kind of leading the design, this was really an incredibly collaborative process. Jeff essentially became a member of our dev team for the duration of the development process. I mean, he was constantly in the room pitching ideas. We were always going back and forth with him to see if ideas worked for the Survivor superfans, or even getting down to the nitty-gritty of like, what do we call this card? Like, is there a really famous Survivor quote that either you've said or one of the players has said that the fans will recognize and have that really fun, like, oh, you know, that was Rob from this season when he was, you know, hiding behind this tree, blah, 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 blah. As far as there being like any particular lead on the project, it was kind of really a very close three-way collaboration. As for the question of like, do we gear this toward Survivor fans or incomers? We really wanted to cater to both. Obviously, we have a really passionate fan base of our own at Exploding Kittens. But the really exciting thing about working on a Survivor game is that the Survivor fan base is just as big, just as passionate, just as well defined. Not only was it exciting to figure out how we could kind of mesh those two fan bases and bring them together for game night, but there was just a really great opportunity to figure out why those two fan bases are so similar and how to kind of best give both of them what they wanted in a way that was both true to the Survivor brand and true to what we do at EK.
Oh, that's really cool. And how long did it take from the start of working on this project to it actually being published in people's hands?
It was about 2 years, give or take. We locked game design back in September of last year. I want to say Jeff brought the idea to us maybe March of 22, but my long-term memory is always a little bit fuzzy, so I don't want to get the dates wrong.
Nah, you're good. It's all good. Has the game been doing well? Like, are people super excited to see that it's come out basically right before a new season started?
Yeah, it has been doing phenomenally so far. I don't know exact sales numbers, but I can tell you I, as kind of a longtime Reddit user, I've been sneaking peeks at the Survivor subreddit and the Exploding Kitten subreddits, and the response has been really exciting. The Survivor fans especially seem to really be enjoying what we've done with the game in terms of making it feel like a proper Survivor love letter, and also just how vocal they are when it comes to the players we included and the players that they would like to see. I remember, I think, 2 days after we put out the initial press release about the game, there was already a video on YouTube of a fan going, oh, well, you know, I like the contestants that have been included, but here is my ideal top 12 inclusions.
Okay.
And just like, it's really fun to see.
Did you have any character, or I should say people, that you wish had been in the game that weren't included in the cards?
Not for me especially. I really trusted Jeff on this one, and Alon did as well, in terms of knowing kind of what the right calculus would be of not just the 12 characters to include, but why certain characters should be paired together on a particular team. I'm not going to name names because we might have plans for down the road, but there is one previous contestant in particular that overwhelmingly people have pointed out should have been an inclusion. And all I'm going to say is that we are aware that she was not in the original print run, and we have heard the fans on that front.
Oh, that's so funny. Did you feel like when you were working on the game, there was a specific mechanic that stuck out more? Because when I originally found out, oh my God, there's a Survivor game, like I went straight to, oh, I bet this is some kind of like deduction game. But it sounds like there's probably quite a bit of combination of different things. Is there like a specific mechanic or three mechanics that you really leaned into for the design?
The biggest one, obviously, is the Tribal Council experience. I mean, that is the thing where if you know, if you grab 10 people off the street and you ask them, name one thing from Survivor, most of them are going to bring up Tribal Council.
Yeah, so player elimination.
Not just player elimination, but that whole social dynamic, social engineering element of it, where you need to kind of make your case for why you should or shouldn't be voted out. And then beyond that, there were other areas that we really wanted to capture. So a big one, we have a class of cards in the game that we call reward challenges. For example, one of them is basically every player at the table is going to hold out between 1 and 5 fingers on their hand. So everyone sort of counts down 3, 2, 1, and then you hold out some number of fingers. The player who's held out the lowest unique number wins the challenge. So if you and I, let's say, both held out 1 finger, but my friend Carol held out 2 fingers, she would win because it's the lowest unique number. Those reward challenges were kind of our chance to bring in a little flavoring of the physical challenges that you would see on the show. You know, Survivor, Jeff gets to basically do this wonderful thing where every season he kind of builds like an adult playground on an island in Fiji. And, you know, people have to do like rope swings and mud crawls and all of this insanity. And I mean, look, obviously we would love to tell players, yeah, you know, go into your backyard and build a 10-foot climbing wall and the first player to climb it and ring a bell wins the challenge. Not exactly something you can chip in the box. So these reward challenges were our opportunity to go, how can we create like a really distilled moment, pit players against each other in a way that feels like Survivor without kind of forcing everyone to get up and run around if that's not necessarily the thing you want to do at a quiet game night.
I used to be jealous as a kid. I was like, oh, I want to design these like awesome challenge courses. They just look so fun. Or like, I was a fan of the show Wipeout. Always love seeing someone run into one of those big balls. Very entertaining.
Yeah, no, Wipeout. I don't know what happened to those kind of shows. I mean, I know Ninja Warrior is one that I've stayed a little bit on top of.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good one.
Especially now that I think the original Japanese run, I think, is over, and now it's just American Ninja Warrior running.
Yeah, no, I think that's cool that you got to adapt it into a card game and try to find a way to mechanically do that without, yes, creating a giant rock climbing wall in someone's backyard.
I remember I had a professor in college who, it was actually for a visual art class, who really drilled into me this idea of, if you're given a totally open-ended design space, you actually end up making worse art. The idea of having some kind of limitation on what you can actually do has this amazing impact on focusing what you think is really important about the design. Am I jealous of the hobby designers who get to put out $50 or $100 games and have, you know, metal components and complicated moving and sliding pieces and all of this great, really like tactile stuff? Absolutely. But working in the mass market space, it really forces you to focus on what is actually like the kernel of this idea and how can I get it across to the player in the simplest way possible. I think what we do really great at Exploding Kittens is we are really good at nailing what is that smallest compelling morsel of an idea, and then how do you make it feel big in a way that doesn't make it cost big.
Yeah, and also keeps the rules overhead pretty light. I know that your games are really accessible, which has made it so successful in a place like Target.
Yeah, it's a big thing for us. I mean, from pretty much day one, we've been proponents of the idea that games should not only ship with paper instructions, but also publicly available video instructions for that reason, because we know, I mean, I'm like this. I learn better both when I can see something and when I can follow along, and having that kind of a guided experience, the way that we do it in our How to Play videos, really helps with that process.
Oh yeah, I totally agree. I loved in the original campaign I also backed for Exploding Kittens, just having the little video. It was like, you know what? Screw this rule book. Watch the video. And I was like, yes, please.
Yeah, it's, you know, I work with the designer Carol Mertz on a few games, and she made me realize that you never quite know what state people are approaching your game in. A lot of people will do game night on a weeknight after an 8-hour workday and a 2-hour commute and all of the other stuff going on in your life. You have to really meet the player where they are. So whatever you can do to ease their entry into this kind of space that you've created at their dining room table, like, that's always going to give them the opportunity to transition in smoothly and have the most fun.
No, I think that's a great piece of advice. She's a smart lady.
Yeah, she is.
So did you have a favorite and a least favorite part of the experience of designing this game?
Yeah, favorite part definitely was working with Alon and Jeff. Obviously, I've been working with Alon for 4 years at this point, and I have learned so much from him, and I know how savvy of a designer he is. But Jeff was just this amazing, amazing collaborator. I mean, the color he brought to the idea of a social game, given his experience as a game maker in his own right on Survivor and as a host. I mean, there was this amazing moment where we were playing the game kind of for the first time, fully fledged internally, and we get to a tribal council, and there's two members on our team who had basically been in an alliance up to that point, and Jeff was leading the tribal council, and within like 3 questions, he had completely broken apart this alliance. He had somehow twisted the entire conversation to be like, well, Thor, do you think that Kelly is going to vote you out? And Kelly, why do you think we should vote Thor out instead of you? And the two of them started like really having this animated debate. And I look away from them and I glance over at Jeff, and he has the biggest smile on his face because he knew what he had done in terms of just completely twisting this alliance into a betrayal. And that was the moment where I knew, I'm like, okay, this is like an incredible partner, and I am just so excited to be working with two really, really amazing designers. As far as like the toughest part of the experience, I personally always have some difficulty when it comes to the, okay, let's take this out of Blue Sky and actually make it real part of the process. There were so many times when I was worried that we might have to kill the voting box design, because we had landed on that design pretty early on into the process, when we were all really excited about making this work because we knew that this integrated component was like the special sauce in the table presentation for this game. There were a few moments where our production team were like, well, you know, nobody really knows how to do this. There's nothing we can kind of look at as a comparison. And to their credit, I mean, they worked really diligently with our partner factory, and they got it across the finish line almost unchanged from the initial concept.
Damn, that is super impressive. And so then for the projects that you've been working on, is there any that fans should be looking out for from Exploding Kittens that are coming out that you're allowed to talk about or recently came out?
I don't think I can name it, but I think I can let fans know, if they're not already aware, that this is Exploding Kittens' 10-year anniversary, and we definitely have an exciting announcement for later this year as far as how we plan on celebrating that in game form.
All right. I love that, ominous. As my last question, unrelated to what we've already talked about, if you could have designed any game that you didn't design, which game do you wish you had designed?
I actually really wish that I had been at Exploding Kittens when we designed Poetry for Neanderthals. That game is probably my second favorite thing that Exploding Kittens has ever published. It's just an elegant concept of, everyone's played a game like Taboo or Catchphrase or any of these other, you know, get your team to say the word or phrase but you have X restriction. Just the simplicity of going, okay, you can only speak in one syllable words, and now it completely fries people's brains and forces them to just get really goofy and creative.
And a little smacky with that blow up club. I remember messing up and getting hit quite a few times.
Oh yeah. As a game designer, if you have an opportunity to put an inflatable club in a game, you take that opportunity because, I mean, how good is that as a component?
Yeah, no, it's very fun.
That game is such a good exercise in one simple rule change that completely alters the color of a familiar idea.
Oh, totally. And leaning into the cave person was a great product choice.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's our art team at work. They're kind of the geniuses when it comes to our theming and messaging.
That's awesome. For everyone who's been listening to this episode, this was Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 109, Survivor, The Tribe Has Spoken. And thanks again, Ian, for being on the show. For anyone trying to find you as like a designer or Exploding Kittens, where can they find you guys?
Exploding Kittens, we're on pretty much all social media platforms at Game of Kittens. There's also our website, www.explodingkittens.com. If you want to check out our games library, buy games direct, or just check out any of the videos that we put out about how to play our games if you're looking for a little bit more information. For me, best way you can find me is my website, www.ianclayman.com.
And I'm your host, Danielle Reynolds. If you're trying to find me on social media, you can check me out on Instagram, X, Blue Sky, under Token Gamer, spelled G-A-Y-M-E-R. And I also have a website, dmarcreativegroup.com. This was super great. I'm so glad we got to talk about this. And I definitely want to grab a copy to play this at my next holiday with my family, because I feel like it would be feisty and fun.
Yeah, it definitely is both of those things. So thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out NoDirectionPodcast.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out All Play at Let'sAllPlay.com. Join us next time.